So I'm going to talk about environmental justice and national climate assessment, but really what the environmental justice community is thinking about climate change and where the environmental justice community thinks the intersection is between national climate assessment and climate change, and also more broader. I want to talk a little bit, if my colleagues don't mind, a little bit more beyond the national climate assessment and some issues we think, some collaboration we think should go on beyond that. So first of all, though, I want to get something off my chest. This is where I want to get off my chest. I know it looks very boring, but it's not. This is a very exciting graph here. So let me tell you about this. This is coming from New Jersey, Department of Environmental Protection data, right? And they've done an estimate of cumulative impacts in New Jersey. This is a hot EJ issue, cumulative impacts. Multiple sources of pollution. What are the impacts of multiple sources of pollution? So on your, and they've done this for every block and group in New Jersey. Think of it as every neighborhood in New Jersey. Think of it as the estimate of the amount of pollution in every neighborhood in New Jersey. So look at the two graphs. On the y-axis, look at the top one. You see on the y-axis, you see measure of cumulative impacts. Think of it as pollution. On the x-axis, you see percent minority, of color population. Look at the relationship. What happens as the number of people of color living in a neighborhood goes up? The amount of pollution and cumulative impacts goes up, right? It's almost a straight line relationship. Look at the lower graph for percent poverty. Again, as the number of poor people in the neighborhood in New Jersey go up, what happens to the cumulative impacts? It goes up. So what this is telling us, and I'll tell you a little bit more about the data. This is 2009 data. So what this is telling me, anyway, is that, look, in New Jersey, as of 2009, the amount of pollution or cumulative impacts in your neighborhood is connected to the color of your skin and the amount of money in your pocket. And that's supposed to be a stance against everything we stand for in the United States and in New Jersey. So this goes a long way towards explaining why I'm an environmental justice advocate, and I think why environmental justice should concern everybody and why it should concern climate change and the National Climate Assessment. So now I've gotten that off my chest. Right? Most people, when they have something to get off their chest, it's something they've done wrong. Right? They confess something they've done wrong. I've never done anything wrong, so I have no confessions. A lot of times you're confessing love for somebody. I'm late in life and unmarried, so you see how that's turned out for me. So I confess about cumulative impacts. That's what I talk about. So I'll go back a minute. I'm director of the Center for Urban Environment. I'm also a member of the New Jersey Environmental Justice Alliance. Our alliance is the only statewide group in New Jersey that focuses on environmental justice issues, and we're the only statewide environmental group in which both the majority of its members and leaders are people of color. Kim already said I'm director of the Center for Urban Environment and that the main purpose of my center is to support the environmental justice community. So I just want you to know that this is where I'm coming from as a frame of reference about climate change. And, you know, this influences, and what I'm going to do is talk about a few issues that the EJ community thinks at the intersection of climate change and environmental justice and a national climate assessment. So the data I showed you came from DEP. Here were the indicators that I showed you. There are 9 indicators. For full disclosure, there are now 34. So for full disclosure, those graphs may change. DEP has not released a new graph. Now, it was 2009 data, they updated it. So it may change. We doubt it, but it might. And for further disclosure, there was a national EJ study done that talked about proximity of people of color to industrial facilities in the TRI, Toxic Release Inventory. And they found the Northeast metropolitan area, they found overall that there was significant correlation, but Northeast metropolitan area, there was not. Now, I don't think that invalidates what I've shown you for New Jersey because you have local indicators. And also, it's just for New Jersey. All right, so I talked about, say, I was going to talk about a couple of issues I thought that the EJ community really thinks is in common for climate change and environmental justice, national climate assessment should cover. And the two are co-pollutants, co-benefits, and vulnerable communities. You've heard, I think George mentioned vulnerable communities, as did Mike also. We'll talk a little bit about that. And I'm going to skip these slides for people know when I say environmental justice, people generally know what I'm talking about. Yeah, okay, so I'm going to skip these slides because of time limitations. So let's talk about co-benefits. What's the argument here? And really, from the EJ community, the argument is this, and from people dealing with climate change, is that, look, in addition to the benefits directly connected to climate change, you know, that from mitigation, adaptation policies that address climate change, you're going to get additional benefits to society. So this is the general idea of co-benefits. And in particular, from the EJ perspective, what's very important is air quality and even going further, particulate matter air pollution. Small particles we breathe in, Why do we think it's so important? Causes tens of thousands of premature deaths every year. Right? It's an EJ issue because the highest concentrations are in urban areas, and it connects mitigation and adaptation policy, as does air quality issues in general. But look, here's your argument for this. Often polluting facilities emit greenhouse gases right along with particulate matter. And I should say not only particulate matter, but also its precursors, nitrogen oxides and sulfur dioxide. So it makes sense to have a policy that addresses this together. Get a bigger bang for your buck. Address emissions and also adaptation. We want to address adaptation for climate change. Should also address adaptation. Should also prepare adaptation for climate change. Make sure the communities are more resilient to the effects of climate change. But we should also make sure that communities are resilient to the effects of other air pollutions, like particulate matter air pollution. And if we do that in the communities that I work in, right, you have an immediate effect from climate change policy. You won't have to wait for extreme weather events like the one that's happened in New Jersey, by the way, is where I'm from, right? So I'm not denigrating those, or heat waves or rise in sea level. But if you maximize the co-benefits of climate change policy and have it address particulate matter air pollution and other air pollutants, you'll start to save lives in Newark, in Trenton, in Camden, cities we work in as environmental justice advocates all the time. And you will make climate change policy then of an immediate concern and immediate relevance to tens of millions of more people in the United States, particularly in urban areas. All right, vulnerable communities. You've heard this term a couple of times. Mike actually may have put up some vulnerabilities. Mike talked about the elderly. So when we talk about vulnerabilities, the things that the EJ community talks about, the elderly, children, sick, low-income communities, and you see some communities of color. And that's what I want to talk about here from the EJ perspective, some communities of color. Because I think what might happen when people hear about this, they'll say, well, that's redundant. Why you address, if you address low-income communities and say they're especially vulnerable to climate change, why do you need communities of color? Is there a different effect from poverty and race? And I think from an EJ perspective, it certainly is. And I want to, you know, from EJ perspective, we definitely want to keep talking about the racial aspect of this. And there are at least two areas where there are documented effects, where there are documented racial aspects, right, to issues related to climate change, and these are heat and extreme weather events. So for heat, several studies have found that race affects temperature-related mortality. Extreme weather events, we really talk about Katrina, and I think it's not controversial to say that most people will accept that people of color had difficulty evacuating, returning, and recovering from the storm. Honing in on Katrina a little bit, there are racial aspects to displacement, right? More people of color were displaced. Racial aspects to returning. See the bottom there about the number of people in the city and percent African American. So there seems to be a racial aspect to that, and a racial aspect to what areas in New Orleans were damaged, more damaged in African American communities. Well, why is this? I keep talking about a racial aspect. How do you explain this? Well, here's some possible reasons. I have air conditioning up there, and the reason I have that up there is because air conditioning, it probably explains some portion of why there is excess mortality connected to race in heat events. But it doesn't explain all of it. So what's going on there? And the rest you see are really from Katrina, studies that were done on Katrina by Bob Bullard. Beverly Wright wrote a book on it, and by Manuel Pastor et al., who wrote a paper on Katrina in 2006. So they talk about, oh, I almost skipped the top. The bottom four, housing discrimination, poor lending, redlining, and they really talk about that. But disproportionate siding and health disparities, let me talk about that for a minute. So these are kind of a classic environmental justice argument, right? Environmental justice studies have found that there's disproportionate siding of polluting facilities in communities of color. Now, when you couple this with health disparities, you notice I don't have any citations there because you all know a lot more about this than I do. I'll leave that up to you. But I think everybody would say there are health disparities based on race. And so when you couple the disproportionate siding and more pollution in communities of color with the health disparities, not only in the amount of burden of illness, but in health insurance, you can see why communities of color would be more vulnerable to the effects of climate change. So now go to the housing discrimination, lending, redlining. This was these authors were talking really about Bullitt and Wright and Pastor et al., really about Katrina. And they were saying, for example, housing discrimination made it harder for people to come back. Lending redlining. And when I talk about lending, discrimination in personal lending for housing, for businesses, made it harder to be prepared for the storm and to recover from the storm. Poor blacks had less access to cars than poor whites. I put that in because I thought that was interesting. That's Pastor et al. Found that. And I think it makes a point that when we say a racial aspect or, how does race play a role in this, what we're really saying is that poor communities of color will be more vulnerable to climate change than poor white communities. And middle-class communities of color will be more vulnerable to climate change than middle-class white communities. Institutional racism, Bullitt and Wright talk about that, and unconscious racism, I added that one in myself. The citation you see is a popular article that talks about what unconscious racism is. I don't have time to go into that, but if you have a question, let's talk about it. But I think summing this up, the argument really is that some communities of color will be more vulnerable to climate change, so this is what the EJ advocates would say, because of existing disparities based on race. These include health disparities, but because of ongoing institutional racism and discrimination. Not a novel argument, but I think that many times in America we have a tough time talking about race. I'll give you an example. How many minutes do I have? Can I give an example? Okay. The example is there was a talking head show on political commentators, and this was the mid-1990s. And, everybody jumps in and gives their opinion. And environmental justice came up. And they all said they didn't know anything about environmental justice. But what they also said was that their first reaction was not based on race. It's based on income. And I thought, well, why is that? If they admit they don't know anything about environmental justice, why do they say that? And then my next reaction is, and does it make you feel better that we're killing poor white people along with everybody else? I mean, why is that better? So what I'm arguing to you is that we can't do that. We have to have these discussions ongoing about race and climate change. And I'm going to argue to you that the people that need to come together and talk about it are the folks in this room, the public health community and the environmental justice community. We each have knowledge, areas of expertise, and we bring them together, we can address this issue that I think really needs to be addressed. And you see this starting to happen with the National Climate Assessment. My colleagues on the National Climate Assessment from the public health point of view are people that are working on this, working right on the edge of this intersection of climate change and environmental justice. And we have some people, someone just came in the room. We have other people in the EJ community that are bridging that gap, but we don't have enough. So I'm arguing to you we need more collaborations, more consistent collaborations, and more enduring collaborations. And I think if we have that, you will not necessarily find that the environmental justice and public health communities will collide. They won't be worlds colliding, but instead there'll be worlds interacting. And I think that's what we need. And I want to point out in ending that would not only benefit, that if we work together, more collaborations, that would not only benefit communities of color and environmental justice communities, but it will benefit the entire United States. I think that's it. Thanks a lot.